From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. It's Friday, January 17th, and here are today's headlines. Lawmakers yesterday got their clearest look yet at what might happen to the cost of heating fuels if they move forward with the controversial Clean Heat Standard. The policy seeks to reduce the amount of fossil fuels that Vermonters use to heat their homes. But Ed McNamara, the chair of the Public Utility Commission, says the Clean Heat Standard would put upward pressure on fuel prices.
Our overall conclusion, after working on this for the last 18 months, Clean Heat Standard is not fundamentally wrong program. We just don't think it's a good fit for Vermont.
Republican Governor Phil Scott says he opposes any proposal that increases the cost of energy. But many Democrats say Vermont needs to raise revenues in order to help residents transition to renewable energy sources that are cheaper over the long term. There's a bipartisan effort at the State House to exempt more Vermonters from paying state income taxes on their Social Security benefits. People with incomes under $50,000 and couples with incomes under $65,000 do not pay state taxes on their benefits right now. That's about half of Social Security recipients in Vermont. Chittenden Representative Jim Harrison says the income exemption levels need to be raised because many older Vermonters are under a lot of financial pressure.
When that was put in there several years back, $50,000 is not $50,000 anymore. It might have been a good number. There is no CPI or inflationary index with that part of the tax law.
Because the tax raises roughly $75 million a year, Harrison says the plan would need to be phased in. The House Ways and Means Committee will now review the bill. Vermont, by the way, is among the handful of states that tax Social Security benefits. 14 months after opening, an outdoor gear exchange location in Essex is set to close next month. Mark Sherman, the store's president, told VT Digger the 5,000-square-foot location, which opened at the Essex Experience in November of 2023, will permanently close its doors February 17th. No staff cuts are expected, though. Inventory and staff from the Essex location will be relocated to the busier store at Burlington's Church Street Marketplace. As the next presidential administration prepares to take office, John Roberts has been cleaning out his desk. The retired Cornwall dairy farmer served as Vermont's state executive director of the USDA's Farm Service Agency under President Biden. Roberts oversaw more than $3 million in disaster relief payments between 2023 and 2024, when Vermont suffered from major summer flooding. He says his office also made a big push before the upcoming change in administrations to get farmers market assistance for specialty crops like maple and honey. They received more than 700 applications.
In Vermont, I think it will help fill some of the gaps left by the disaster funding.
Roberts says one area he hopes the FSA will work on moving forward is making funding applications easier to apply for. Coming up, online sports gambling has been a big hit in Vermont since being legalized 1 year ago. That's prompted state officials to strengthen services that help people who develop gambling problems. And we'll hear about that effort after this. This month marks the first anniversary of online sports betting becoming legal in Vermont. Vermonters have put money down on a wide swath of events over that time. The Super Bowl, the World Series, the NBA Championship, not to mention table tennis during last summer's Olympics. During the past year, the state has also beefed up its resources for people who develop gambling problems. And Vermont Public's Bob Kinzel spoke with host Jen Jarecki for more on that effort.
So, Bob, I understand you've had a chance to review a lot of the numbers surrounding the first year of online sports betting in Vermont. What stands out to you?
You know what really stands out for me, Jen, is not a statistic. It's the amount of advertising by the betting companies. You can't watch sports on TV these days without being inundated by these ads. And at the same time, most of the sports cable networks now have entire programs that are dedicated to betting opportunities in upcoming games. It's a dramatic change from just a few years ago. Now, looking at the stats just released from the Department of Liquor and Lottery, they show that Vermonters bet just over $140 million last year, and roughly 90% of this money was returned in winnings. Now, it's hard to calculate exactly how many Vermonters place bets because there are several betting companies and some folks have multiple accounts, but around 12,000 people is a reasonable estimate. Now, this group of Vermonters placed almost 7 million bets last year with an average bet of around $20. State officials are expecting an increase in calls to Vermont's problem gambling hotline, but they say it typically takes between 18 months and 2 years for these problems to fully materialize. Dr. Kelly Klein is the medical director at the Vermont Department of Mental Health. That's the group that administers the state's problem gambling programs. She refers to sports gambling as, quote, a hidden addiction.
Gambling, especially sports betting, is socially acceptable. It's widely promoted, but it is a hidden addiction. And so if people are struggling, they might not even realize that they are because everyone around them is doing similar things.
And Dr. Klein says she's concerned because it's become so easy to place bets.
Truthfully, it was a lot harder to become addicted when you had to drive to a casino, right? Rather than just rolling over and turning on your phone. So the ease of access has definitely increased the potential for addiction.
I hear what Dr. Klein is saying anecdotally, but Bob, are there any studies to indicate that online sports betting is more addictive than other forms of gambling?
Jen, that's an issue that's being closely looked at right now because there are gambling counselors who believe there's no question that the rate of addiction is higher because it's so easy to place bets with your phone. You don't have to get off the couch. And secondly, some people are really drawn to making many different types of bets during one sporting event.
So for people who are facing addiction, what's the goal of some of these problem gambling programs?
Jen, it's really consumer education on several levels. And that's because Dr. Klein says she doesn't want to ban sports betting. She wants to be certain that folks gamble responsibly and enjoy the experience. But at the same time, she also wants people to be aware of the warning signs of addiction, when it starts to consume your life, when you start betting on events that you have absolutely no interest in, and when your betting habits create financial stress for you and your family.
So that they're able to engage in it in a fun way, a social way, and then maybe recognize, oh, this is going in a wrong direction. And stop before it becomes a huge issue. That's really the goal. People don't understand odds. You know, the fact that the house always wins. And even if it seems like, you know, if I keep doing it, eventually I have a better chance. It's just not true.
Jen, I should also mention that the state dedicates $500,000 a year from its lottery revenue to its various problem gambling programs. And on the other side of the ledger, the state raised roughly $6.3 million in revenue from online sports betting in 2024. And this number is expected to go up in 2025.
Bob, you mentioned the hotline for folks who feel they may have a gambling problem. How does the hotline work?
Jen, it's really a twofold approach. First, it provides an immediate contact for someone who feels they might be developing a gambling problem, and they're encouraged to call 1-800-GAMBLER. Now, the folks answering the phone are all people who have experienced their own gambling issues. This is a very important part of the program. I spoke with Dave, who preferred that we not use his last name, and I asked him how he responds when a call comes in.
Right at the beginning, the most important thing is you don't be judgmental. We don't be judgmental of anything that they're doing or they've done or what they're saying. At that point, you just want to do a lot of listening to where they're at, what's been going on with their gambling problem. And again, you offer them support.
And Dave thinks it's important that he shares his own gambling addiction issues with the caller.
I'm in recovery myself now for just shy of 5 years. A lot of the questions or things that the individual is going through, I can relate to. So I think it makes the person calling in feel more comfortable that they're not talking to someone that doesn't have lived experience in gambling, and that's what I'm able to do.
When someone calls the hotline, Bob, what kind of resources are available to them?
Well, there's several, Jen. First, through someone like Dave, he asks the person if they'd like him to follow up with them with a call or a text in the coming days. He lets them know what programs are available in their area. And for some people, this is a very good starting point. Or Dave can also put the person in touch with a certified counselor in their part of the state. There are 7 counselors in place right now, with another 20 getting ready to go through the certification process this spring. Dave says that initial phone call to the hotline is one of the most important steps that a person with gambling issues can ever take.
When they make that call, unfortunately, a lot of them are in a desperate situation. And that's when you get that first call, you want to kind of grasp onto it. You want to keep them engaged with you. You want them to know that there's light at the end of the tunnel. You want them to know that they can go one day at a time and they can go forward in their recovery program if that's what they choose to do.
And once again, Jen, for someone interested in calling the hotline, that number is 1-800-GAMBLER.
Vermont Public's Bob Kinzel. Bob, thanks so much for your reporting. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Jen.
And that was host Jen Jarecki. And it seems appropriate now to transition to our weekly check-in on news from the world of sports. And with that reminder, fresh from the conversation we just heard, to please wager responsibly if you're keen to bet on any of the sports we're about to discuss. And let's start with the NHL, which has a logjam of teams, especially in the Eastern Conference, vying for potential playoff appearances. That includes the Boston Bruins, who mercifully emerged from a 6-game winless streak by beating 2 teams from Florida last week, the defending Stanley Cup champion Panthers in overtime, and then a 6-2 win at home against the Tampa Bay Lightning, a team they're in a virtual tie with for 3rd place in the Atlantic Division. The win against Tampa included a much-needed jolt from the Baby Bees in Providence, sending young forward Matt Patra up to the big club to center a line between Charlie Coyle and Trent Frederick. And the move paid dividends just 5 minutes into that game when Patra dished a perfect pass to Frederick on a 2-on-1 rush that got the Bruins on the board first. That was followed by defenseman Parker Wotherspoon's first ever NHL goal and strikes by Brad Marchand and David Pastrnak as the Bruins built a 4-0 lead they did not relinquish. And that's thanks chiefly to goalie Jeremy Swayman, who's been brilliant in his last couple of starts. But while Swayman standing on his head to keep pucks out of the net is a good thing, the Bruins are allowing far too many of those shots to get to him. Swayman was forced to make more than 40 saves in those back-to-back games against the Panthers and Lightning, and that is not a recipe for future success, no matter how good your goalie is. And with up to 9 teams in the East all within striking distance of the 2 available wildcard playoff berths, the Bruins currently owning the first, but just a single point ahead of Columbus for the second, every game now, even well before the trade deadline, is taking on the feel of playoff importance. That very much includes tomorrow's contest in Ottawa against the Senators, who sit just 2 points behind Boston in the standings. So a 3-game winning streak for the Bruins would be just what the doctor ordered, although it may be a tough prescription to fill with the injury bug beginning to bite. Top defenseman Charlie McAvoy will miss that contest against Ottawa with a recently disclosed injury, and former Senator Mark Kastelic is still out after taking a cross-check to the face in a game against the Lightning on January 8th. Over in the NBA, it's becoming obvious that the Boston Celtics will not have an easy road to repeating as NBA champions. The Celtics' most recent loss came against a Toronto Raptors squad that Boston walloped by 54 points in a blowout at the end of December. But on Wednesday night, the Raptors out-hustled and played better defense than Boston in a 110-97 home victory that left the Celtics 6.5 games behind Cleveland for first place in the East. The Celtics continued to live or die by shooting from beyond the arc, and they were a woeful 16 of 46 in their attempts from three-point range against Toronto. Now, you could argue the Celtics are saving their best for the postseason, but they don't seem to be instilling the kind of fear in other teams that they did last year. And both Cleveland and the Oklahoma City Thunder are looking right now like more legitimate title contenders than the Celtics. Meanwhile, the NFL moves into its divisional playoff rounds this weekend, and the matchups are compelling, although of the 4 games on tap, I sense only one upset brewing. I just can't see the Houston Texans topping the defending champion Kansas City Chiefs, especially with the game at Arrowhead Stadium. The Washington Commanders likely won't do anything to stop the 15-2 Detroit Lions, a team I think is destined to finally play in and win their first ever Super Bowl this year. I was shocked at how easily the LA Rams beat the Minnesota Vikings last weekend, but I can't see them pulling off the same feat against the Philadelphia Eagles and their number 1 defense. However, I am eyeing an upset as the Baltimore Ravens head to Buffalo on Sunday, where temperatures are forecast to be cold enough to make a penguin shiver. The smart money, given those conditions and the Bills at home in front of their frenzied fans, would be on a Buffalo win, but I'm not wise enough to cash that check. And I think Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson will have a game for the ages. I'm calling Baltimore winning by 3 on a wobbly field goal kicked in the waning seconds to add to the long litany of heartbreaking losses for Bills fans. But I sure hope no one from the Bills Mafia fan base is hearing that particular prognostication. Next Friday, we'll update you on the finalists in the men's and women's brackets of the Australian Open Tennis Tournament. But for now, that's our weekly update on news from the world of sports. And thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Peter Hirschfeld, Bob Kinzel, Nathaniel Wilson, and Elodie Reed. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelyan, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Talk to you Monday.